We're going to bring y'all to our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, and with me, per usual, my master of all things video and sound, Maxime.
How's it going?
Maxime, excited to announce, after way too long, a former writer for the Las Vegas Review Journal, where he covered the Raiders, the Aces, the Golden Knights, and combat sports. The Golden State beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, who attends every single practice, press conference, shoot around, and game. And a guy I've been desperately trying to trap into a drink with me at some point this offseason, Mr. Sam Gordon. What's going on, Sam?
What's up, fellas? Happy Friday. Happy to be back.
We need you. Happy to have you, but we desperately need you. The offseason has started, man. We're here. Man. Finals are behind us. The draft is behind us. There's Paul George rumors. There are big things to jump into. But before we look forward, let's look back. All right. My favorite topic, in fact, my favorite segment on this show, is the off the court report, Sam. And I'm not sure we've done it with you yet. The idea is the off the court report is like, look, the people listening to this show, they know what happens on the floor. You know, if they've gone all the way down to listen to the huddle, they're watching all the games. They know all that stuff, but they don't have access to the things you do, Sam. What happens off the floor, outside of the lines, practices, those kinds of things. We're now removed from your first season. So look back. Any story, any interaction that you had during the year that kind of sticks out to you?
Yeah, great question. The one that jumps to mind was UCLA, the Warriors practice. This was in mid-March. They had a game on ABC against the Lakers the following Saturday, the next day. It was a Saturday with a primetime game. And this was the day before. I believe it was Steph Curry's first practice. He injured his ankle against the Chicago Bulls.
Sure.
Comes back, practices that day. They're practicing at UCLA. In walks Chris Paul's son, Chris. Who I believe is a freshman now, when practice wraps up, and just seeing how comfortable he was interacting with all the players. Russell Westbrook pops in. They're playing LA. You know, LA hip hop is blaring through the speakers. Practice is over. It's relaxed. And it was just really cool seeing how comfortable Chris and Lil Chris were in that setting, in that environment. And it speaks to, I think, just kind of one of the themes of the Warriors organization, very family oriented, very, very family friendly. There was a game later in the season. I believe it was against Memphis at Chase Center. The Warriors blew out the Grizzlies. Chris Paul played great. And Chris's son came up for that game with some of his classmates from LA and, you know, got to spend some, you know, had to hang out with players after the game and whatnot as well. So just seeing how comfortable, you know, everybody was interacting together, just seeing how comfortable he was in the NBA space and whatnot. And it also puts in perspective, you know, where Chris Paul is at in his career. He's got a teenage son. He's very involved. And it was cool to see that, you know, come to light at a practice with so many great players around and just knowing the stakes of the game the next day.
I love that story. You also blew my fucking mind. And I guess it's just me not ever really looking around at how fast time is going. So, I mean, you know, a little transparency here. Before the mics went hot, you and I covered that we'd probably talk about this story. And I knew it.
Yeah.
Here's more transparency. When we did that, when I was thinking little Chris, I was thinking like 5-year-olds, dude. Like legitimately, I was thinking like this little kid and like I visioned like Steph going and picking him up and like Draymond having some kind of like fake high five with him or something. I didn't think freshman or teenager.
Eighth grade maybe. But no, he fits right in. You know, he's a hooper just like his dad is. And that's the space. You could see how comfortable he is in that space in the gym with his dad, with his dad's friends, with some of the best players in the world ahead of a really big game. So, it was just cool to see that, you know, the environment relaxed. And as intense as basketball is, there's so much more beyond basketball for everybody involved with the Warriors, with the organization, with the players. So, yeah, just an endearing moment.
And Russell Westbrook immediately welcomed in by everybody. Obviously had a lot of friendships on the team, that kind of stuff. I mean, like, it's a fraternity, yeah? So they're
100%, right? I mean, this, like you said, there's only, 4,000? I don't know the exact number. Not that many players who have ever played in the NBA. So there's the end of the day, mutual respect between everybody, despite the rivalries on the floor, for sure.
Sam, give us a sense of your personality type, and I'll go first so that it covers you a little bit. I worked for a firm, this is a while back, and the senior partner had a kid who was about 8-9 years old. Kid was nice enough. I mean, fine, I didn't care. But I was interested in kissing the senior partner's ass, so I developed a relationship with the kid. You know, I came over, we played little games, we had like a a Nerf hoop I brought in specifically, like made a big deal of showing the boss, like, oh, weird, just in case your kid comes, off we could go. When if you were playing for that team, let's say you're Pudzemski, right? You're a younger player. Chris Paul's son comes in. Would you try to like earn points with Chris Paul by making friends with his son? Or do you have a little bit of like more pride than I do and handle it a little bit more upfront?
I probably would have just, you know, said what's up and kind of kept it pushing from there. Maybe checked in a little bit. How's everything going? But kept it natural and kept it pushing after that.
Yeah, me too. I don't know why my team told me that story about that other thing. Also, Chris Paul's son, if you want to kick it, let me know. We're here with that in mind. Let's turn to our offseason focus. And so, Sam, what we're going to do today, I'm going to be transparent with you. We're going to start with concrete ground, things that have happened, things that are going to impact Golden State. And then as we go forward, we're going to get a little bit more murky, start talking about things we aren't sure about. But let's start with things we know that have actually happened. Since the last time we recorded, a couple of people joined the Warriors. They drafted Quinton Post, and they traded for Lindy Waiters III. Let's start with the second, Lindy Waiters. All right, and here's my my suggested approach. I'll give you logistics, and yeah. I'll also more transparency. All my logistics, Sam, are stolen from you. I read all of your articles. I literally have quotes from your articles here. So you did all the research for me. I'll give you who I understand them to be on paper. Then you give us elevator pitch, most optimistic version. Why should we be happy for this acquisition? All right. So first guy, Lindy Waiters III. Warriors had the 52nd pick. They trade the 52nd pick to OKC. They pick up Lindy Waiters. They get that pick back, by the way. We'll cover that in a second. When they get Waiters, they add a 26-year-old 6'6 two guard out of Oklahoma State. He averaged 9.5 points, 3.6 rebounds in college, and then over his 104 games in the pros, over 12.3 minutes, averaged 5.1 points. So, you know, pro, he's been here for a while, not an in particularly gigantic career so far. But Sam, what did the Warriors see in him, and why should Warrior fans be excited that he's joining the squad?
Well, great questions. First, a little context with the number 52 pick, right? It's unlikely to find a long-term NBA rotational player in that spot. Is it possible? Absolutely. The Warriors did it last year. They got Trayce Jackson-Davis at 57. It is possible. There's been several players picked in the 50s that have had great careers, Manu Ginobili being one of them. That being said, it's very, very, very unlikely. And Mike Dunleavy, the Warriors, knew that going into the draft, right? They knew that. They understood that. You have an opportunity, essentially, with that pick to draft. Think of it this way. You're basically drafting Lindy, right? As you mentioned, 26 years old, 6'6", comes through the Oklahoma City developmental program. What have they developed the last couple of years? A lot of wings, a lot of two-way guys, right? They have a great program there. He wasn't able to get on the floor much because they have a lot of depth in their backcourt, on the wing, on the perimeter. But there's traits to like. You mentioned the size, 6'6", the shooting ability. He's 37% lifetime in the NBA. That's solid, right? And that's, you're not getting a lot of volume. He's not a regular. He's not getting regular minutes. So to sustain that percentage, I know, again, it's a very small sample size, but he can shoot the ball and, you know, profiles potentially as a movement shooter, right? The Warriors, we know they needed length. They needed versatility. They needed capable defenders on the wing. Well, he profiles as that as well. So it's very much, you look at that 52nd pick when you're trading it, you have a proven commodity that has experience that the Warriors believe has a little bit of untapped potential. And does that mean, you know, he's going to be a world beater? I'm not saying that. Can he contribute to the rotation this upcoming season? I believe there's absolutely a possibility that he can. You look at his attributes, you look at what the Warriors need. He doesn't need the ball. He's a catch and shoot player. There's I think, a lot to like in terms of the upside here for when you're talking about the second unit, you know, the end of the rotation and you know, depth on the wing, on the perimeter where the Warriors needed it the most.
Dude, you sold me at a chance to be a contributor in the rotation because you don't see that. It's far from guaranteed in the second round. Yep. That's exactly right. And of the stats that I read, the random one that stuck out to me is that he's averaged 12.3 minutes in the league. You know, I was expecting something far less. I really did. You know, I play fantasy basketball. I host an NBA podcast. I didn't know there was one Lindy Waiters, let alone three Lindy Waiters, too. So I was very like this. I did not know anything about this player. And then looking at his stats, hearing your description, you know, shit, I'm on board. It's a roll of the dice.
You know, he was part of Oklahoma City's playoff roster, too, right? I mean, he only played three games. It wasn't very many minutes. But a team like Oklahoma City that had visions, designs of competing for a championship rostered him in the postseason. I think that says something, right?
Sam is a professional, Maxime. So I didn't actually include this quote in there. What he says when he, because he references those postseason experience in his article too. And what he says is he played in three games, period. We don't get shit about how many minutes he played. You know, it's like, so I got the feeling that it must have been a pretty low amount of court time he had out there, but he was out there for a young and hungry team. Maxime, if Mike Dunleavy had called you, right? So, I mean, roller coaster of an evening. At this stage, they didn't reacquire the 52nd pick. It's still theirs. He says, all right, I got a trade on the table right now. Right now, I have a trade on the table. I could bring in Lindy Waiters, but shit, Bronny's available. Everyone's talking about Bronny James. There he is. Maxime, what should I do? Should I make the trade or bring in Bronny? What would you have told him?
Well, as you know, I'm no draft expert, but it sounds like if his last name was...
Never mind.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, go ahead. No, what I understand is, and you know, from what you can tell just from the limited minutes he played his freshman year at USC, he probably wouldn't have been drafted at all if his last name was not James. And at the same time, it seems like the Lakers are really doing the Lake Show thing right now. It's a really compelling story. He's probably not going to play a ton for the Lakers either. We're also hearing, you know, if Mike Dunleavy's calling me, maybe Rich Paul is calling me too and saying, hey, fuck off, do not draft him, because that's what it sounded like was happening for every team except the Warriors. Or except the Lakers. So many, many reasons I think Lindy Waiters is a better call than Bronny James. And listen, I hope that the kid has a great career. I'm excited for him. It seems like he has potential. It also seems like he probably should have done what James Wiseman should have done and taken a year or two more to develop some skill set in college before going to the NBA. But I get it. LeBron only has a couple years left. He wants to play with his kid. You can make those things happen when you're one of the greatest players of all time to play in the NBA and LeBron James. So go for it. But for the Warriors, no thanks.
This is straightforward guesswork, Sam, I'm sure, right? This is just a guess. This is not a report. From what you understood, was Bronny James on the draft board? Was that a thing that was ever happening for Golden State?
I don't think that was ever a thing. No. I mean, the majority of the players that they brought in to work out were veterans, third, fourth, and fifth, you know, in some cases, sixth-year college players with a ton of experience. And when you're looking at where the Warriors are at right now, right, makes sense, given where Stephen Curry's at in his career. The window is closing, if not already closed. You want to find somebody that's experienced that can come in and contribute right away, as were Bronny James. And I think Bronny has tools. I think he definitely has NBA tools, things that can be developed. I see some similarities to Gary Payton II, right? Shorter, you know, point sturdy, potentially point of attack defender, high IQ, going to play to his strengths. And can knock down a jumper. I think down the road, that's kind of the player that you're hoping that Bronny James can become. And that's a contributing player on a pretty good team if he can reach his ceiling. But with where the Warriors are at right now, it makes sense that they want experience and hence why they traded the pick. And then when they reacquired the pick, what did they draft? A really experienced player that may be ready to contribute at some level right now.
What you are saying is they don't have any runway. This isn't a team that's looking to develop anybody. They have to, I mean, right, you know, as we talk, Steph Curry's prime is ticking down. I mean, literally, every second that goes by, right? The Warriors recognize that. And even if Bronny James could become a contributor, that's not what they need. They need a contributor. You know, that's what they need. And so even at the back end of the roster, even when you're looking down at the end of the bench, you want that person to maybe be more than 23 years old. You know, you want them to be ready. And this guy, Lindy Waiters, is not only 26, he has played years in the league. You know, there is no runway. Whatever he's ready to contribute, he's ready to contribute. We don't have to figure it out. Yeah. And to what you said, Maxime, we'll use this for off-season content and we don't have to dive down the rabbit hole now. But I do not think LeBron's the best player of all time. My generation, how old I am, that's always going to be Jordan. But after this draft, I'm willing to say without question, he's the most powerful NBA player of all time. LeBron is. I have never seen anybody with this kind of influence. Not, you know, that he was able to usher his son into the league. He's able to pick his head coach out of nowhere. His podcast mate, you know, just this offseason, his podcast mate became his head coach and his son became his teammate, you know, and with nothing to argue about what they do on the floor, comparing what they do off the floor. You know, Jordan didn't want Phil Jackson to go. What happened? He ended up in fucking Washington. You know, LeBron wants J.J. Redick to come. What happens? J.J. Redick is the head coach. So I do think he is the most powerful player. But more importantly, Quentin Post. Sam, let me give you the intangibles, or actually the tangibles. Then you give me the elevator pitch and why you might be able to help. Quentin Post, 24-year-old, 7-foot big man, played 5 years in college, 2 years Mississippi State, 3 years at Boston College, where in his final year, all ACC second team, all defensive team, and averaged 17 and 8.1 boards and shot 43% from beyond the arc. Sam, who is this guy? Why the hell is he still available? How did we land him this late?
He's Quentin Post, right? He's brings to the Warriors a skill set, and it's unclear, right? We don't yet know if he's going to be on a two-way, if he's going to be on the roster. The Warriors have some optionality in how they proceed with his contract. I think that's one of the reasons they wanted to get back in the second round, is to have some flexibility with whomever they draft, not be beholden to negotiations with undrafted free agents and the contract stipulations and whatnot. Mm-hmm. You know, this gives them some optionality, right? But he's 7 feet. You read off the stats. He can shoot the ball. He's a perimeter threat. He's a stretch big. The Warriors didn't have a stretch big this past season. Not a real stretch center. So it gives them a different kind of dynamic theoretically, right? Again, an experienced player, 24 years old. You don't have to. He knows what to do. He knows how to play. You don't have to runway him. He's closer to a finished product than a freshman or a sophomore would be. And he gives them size, right? We know the Warriors wanted to get bigger. They wanted to get a little bit more athletic. They wanted to get more versatile. And he gives them size, you know, legit size. He's a 7-footer. I do think NBA defense is going to be a little different from him, a little different for him. But Mike Dunleavy believes he's going to be able to hold up, at least positionally, you know, in terms of protecting the rim at an adequate level, at least being big. You know, knowing where to be and being big. We're going to see him out here switching on guys like Kyrie Irving and shiftier guards? Probably not. But can he function within a team scheme at the NBA level? That's what you're banking on. That's what you're betting on. That's what you're hoping for. So, again, you have to have context here. He's a pick in the 50s. But if he can contribute at any level, if he can play spot minutes, if he can play rotation minutes, right, if he's eventually a part of the rotation at all, that is a major, major win for the Warriors, let alone if he can contribute during his rookie season like Trayce Jackson-Davis was able to. So there was it makes sense. The way they handled the draft, the way they approach the drafts makes sense. These are marginal moves, but with where the Warriors are at in terms of their salary cap, in terms of their assets, what they have, it's important to nail marginal moves. And it feels like they had a plan here. They got bigger, they got more athletic, they got a little bit more versatile, and they added some more shooting. So it's sensible moves, turning the 52nd pick into two players that might be able to contribute.
I am very pleased. I mean, we'll find out. Really, we won't know until, you know, a few months from now. But I like the idea, and this is a terrible analogy that just came to me, which means it probably won't land. But let's try it. Nonetheless, it seems to me these are kind of like slot machines, you know, like a first round pick, top 10 is like one of those slot machines where you bet $20 and hope you win something. If you lose it, it sucks ass. You actually put a lot in there. These are like penny slots. You know, it's a second round pick, dude. Like if it pays off, excellent. Wow, great. Yeah. If not, that's okay. Yeah, you weren't expecting anything anyways. It's worth a roll of the wheel and see what the hell happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And as it pertains to Lindy, again, I would expect him to compete for minutes in the rotation. I think there's a pretty good chance we see him play for the Warriors and contribute. So again, getting a contributor at all with the 52nd pick, big time, and then being able to take a flyer on a player with some traits, with some attributes that they don't necessarily have in terms of the size and shooting from the center position. Shrewd operating by Mike Dunleavy Jr., no doubt about it.
Let's get ready to speculate. Before we do, just kind of a follow-up question with you, man. Help us live alongside you during your first offseason here. So I would imagine that almost everybody you talk to who likes sports really looks up to the job that you have. I do. It's an awesome thing.
I appreciate it. Right?
You cover the team, you're there, all those. Okay. I also know, having worked for too long, that every job has portions that suck ass. Doesn't matter. Pick one. They all have a downside. I know the upsides of your job. I watch it every day. You get to watch these guys live. What's been the hardest thing about being a beat writer? What's a downside for you now that you're a year in?
Good question. I don't know if I call it a downside, but as much as a reality that not necessarily that I'm adjusting to, because it was similar in Vegas, but it's different now sticking to one beat, covering a full time. It's 24/7.
Yeah.
Right. It's 24/7. So I'm always attentive or on alert in case something happens, in case something's developing. That's what sports are now. That's what the NBA, the NFL, certainly setting that precedent with just kind of the year spacing out everything. I'm always just kind of thinking about what could happen next, and it keeps me on my toes. And I think a good and healthy and productive way, sometimes a stressful way, but hey, we all, like you said, we all have stress with our jobs, and it's stress that I enjoy and find to be motivating. I like being busy. I like the rush of having to figure things out and having to solve problems. So a little stress is okay. I'm all right with it.
Appreciate you saying that. Really, you're just helping me through therapy. I'll give you a little glimpse behind the scenes. I brought friends to a game. I brought Maxime and my friend Tommy to a Giants game, and we're all sitting there. I'm with my wife as well. And I'm talking to Erica first. What percentage of your job do you like? Same kind of setup. We know we all hate things. And Erica and I are both like, 60-40, somewhere there. Yeah, I probably like more, but there's a large portion I don't like. We ask Maxime and my friend Tommy. They told me 90-10. I love 90% of it and hate 10. It's been like a month, Sam. I'm not over it. I'm still hella angry. I don't even believe it. I got like defensive. Erica did that thing where she like held me back. Like, dude, settle down. Like, fine. They love their job. I have not moved on in any way. It's bullshit. Maxime, is that still true? 90-10?
Correct. 90-10. You're welcome.
Let's get murky, gentlemen. Klay Thompson, Sam. Anything? What's happening? Do you have? Are there rumors to report? Is there anything that we should know? What's the current state of Klay Thompson?
Well, I don't have anything concrete in terms of where the negotiations sit or don't sit. I know this. The Warriors have been able to, per the new CBA, they've been allowed to negotiate with Klay Thompson since the NBA Finals ended. You can negotiate with and retain your own free agents. You don't have to wait till June 30th anymore. The Finals ended, what, a week and a half ago? And no deal, right? If the Warriors have all come out, people associated with the organization come out and said that they want Klay Thompson back, and yet here we are 2 days away from free agency and he's not back. If they wanted to get this done and it was the most pressing priority for him, it would have happened by now, right? Goes to show you, not saying they don't want him back, not saying that, don't want to put that out there. There's going to be order of operations that the Warriors are adhering to, mm-hmm. And Klay Thompson is not at the front of that order of operations, or else, again, the deal probably would have been done right by now, right? So that being said, I fully expect him to hit free agency. And the reports have been trickling out today from some of the national insiders, right, about teams that might be interested. I think Mark Stein reported Dallas as a possibility. You've seen Denver, Philadelphia, we know has a lot of cap space, Orlando. And these are all teams in winning situations that have goals of winning. We know winning's important to him. He mentioned that's something that he wants to prioritize with his next step, whatever that might be. Those are all teams that are in position to win and where he feels a need or amplifies a strength, right? The Nuggets kind of murky with where KCP's at. Sure. What's he going to do? Dallas just kind of cleared up some cap space by reportedly trading Tim Hardaway Jr. over to Detroit. Orlando and Philly both have cap space and both are in dire need of shooting. So there's going to be suitors for him. And I think it's very realistic Klay Thompson is not in a Warriors uniform next season. I think it's very, very realistic. We'll see what happens. Again, there's a lot of things that still have to play out, but I have no doubt that he's going to have suitors. And again, what does it say that a deal hasn't already been done, knowing that they had, weeks, months to prepare for this, knowing Klay Thompson was going to be a free agent. So yeah, nothing would shock me at this point. I certainly wouldn't be surprised at all if he left.
It you mentioned that a lot of other things have to happen. Dominoes need to fall before they hit clay for the Warriors. Yeah. And right now we're in the middle of a whole bunch of Paul George rumors. You know, I mean, I'm not breaking news by saying that. Just the way that the salary cap and the aprons are going to impact this team, practically speaking, does Golden State need to kind of figure out what happens with Paul George before they can even really make it an offer with Clay? I mean, just with the cap concerns, am I wrong in thinking that?
I mean, that's definitely, I think, the taking precedent right now to bring back Clay Thompson because, again, multitude of factors, but in order to trade for Paul George, you're most likely going to need to utilize Chris Paul's guaranteed salary. And right now, I think the Warriors are around $176-177 million, including the $30 million that hasn't yet been guaranteed to Chris Paul. That's for 12 players. That's not including Klay Thompson. Yep. That's if you trade for Paul George and Chris Paul is a part of that deal, you guarantee his salary. He's a part of that deal. You have to match salaries, and that's going to keep the Warriors around $177 million. That's not going to be enough to keep Klay Thompson. They're capped out of the second apron, $190 million. The luxury tax is $171 million. The first apron is $179 million. That's just not enough. Yep. Practically, it's not enough. If they and the Chris Paul's contract, they're going to push that guarantee date back to Sunday, giving them a little bit more time to work out a trade. If they waive Chris Paul and they don't get a deal done, they waive Chris Paul, that takes them down to $147 million. Then you can re-sign Klay Thompson at a more competitive market value. Offer without having to worry about the aprons, and you might have, you know, you'd have probably room left over for the mid-level exception, maybe the biannual exception as well. So that creates flexibility to bring him back, to add another key piece or two potentially in free agency, and then pretty much roll back next year with the same squad and marginal upgrades. It's totally understandable why you're canvassing the market and looking at a Paul George right now, right? I mean, absolutely. Bring secondary scoring, bring shooting, bring size on the wing, and is a 9-time All-Star. He has pedigree. So he's at this stage of his career, he's still a top-end player, not what he maybe once was 3 or 4 years ago, certainly on the defensive end, but still definitely an impact player, one of the top 20 or 25 players in the league. And if he's out there, given what we talked about earlier, the window for Steph Curry and whatnot, you have to do your due diligence and see what you can make happen.
Exactly right. And I think the timing of these things is really important. I've been listening to other NBA pods, and I listened to one recently that mentioned that their perception was that no offer had been made by Golden State to Clay yet. And it sounds like that might be true. And that's why the no deal has been made. But then the takeaway from that was, oh, wow, the relationship's done. They hate each other. He won 4 championships. They can't even make him an offer. What does that mean? But I don't think that's the story. The story is that Golden State needs to understand what's going to happen with the other portions of the roster before they can make an offer. This isn't a fuck you, Clay. This is a, we are interested in Paul George. Let's see what goes down there. Now, prioritizing Paul George over Clay does say something, but it's not saying we don't care about what you've done for us, Clay. It's just saying we've got to focus on the future before we can figure out what we're doing with you. Maxime, if you had to bet a significant amount of money to you, will Clay Thompson be a Golden State Warrior in the 2024-2025 season?
Probably not. We've been talking about this a little bit. The Nuggets are sort of a newer addition since we last discussed Clay Thompson's situation. That kind of hits a little closer to home, you know? It's like, oh, Western Conference, as opposed to Orlando. I know they're an up-and-coming team, but it'd be a lot harder to see them on a championship contender in the Western Conference. You know, you could see a series where it's Nuggets versus Golden State and Klay Thompson is battling against us. It's heartbreaking.
It's unfortunately true. Sam, last question for you, because I've now officially kept you 3 minutes longer than planned.
Good.
We appreciate you. If you had to bet something significant to you, just a guess, educated one, you're betting, will Paul George be a member of the Golden State Warriors for the 2024-2025 season?
Oh, well, I don't know. I think there are, I don't know.
I'm going to make you bet.
Yeah, let's talk it out. Let's talk it out. So, in order to get this deal, in order for a deal to happen, there's a couple things at play. First, Paul George holds a lot of cards here, right? And then the Clippers hold the rest of them. The Warriors don't hold a ton of cards. They're pretty much beholden to what Paul George wants, and then after that, what the Clippers want. They don't have the cap space to just sign him. So you can forget about that. You're not just going to sign him, and it's all but an impossibility to clear out the requisite dollar amount in order to just sign him as a free agent. You'd have to move off a ton of contracts. It's not feasible, not even worth getting into, right? So the most likely mechanism would be an opt-in and trade. Essentially, he tells the Clippers, hey, if you don't trade me to Golden State, I'm opting out, and you get nothing from me at all. You know, at least if in theory, if he opts in and you negotiate a trade, be it with the Warriors or somewhere, some another team, you're able to get at least something back. You have something to show for trading Paul George, right? Yep. So he has a lot of leverage in that he can kind of dictate what he wants and kind of where this thing wants to go, because he can become a free agent and go sign with Philadelphia, just sign into their cap space, or sign with a team like Orlando. Then, in terms of the Clippers holding the cards, well, do the Clippers want to make a trade with Golden State? They're interdivisional rivals. Do they like anything that Golden State has coming back? Do they want Chris Paul and expiring contracts in draft capital? Or would they want a player like Jonathan Kuminga, who the Warriors are, of course, very high on, who had a big leap this past year, and who's 21, not 34, as Paul George is, going to want max money, right? That's part of the reason we're in this situation, is because Paul George wants a max extension. The Clippers, up to this point, haven't given it to him yet. They still could. There's always the possibility that they agree on an extension. I think that's on the table as well, if the dollars and cents are right, and then this all becomes moot. But he's going to want his money, and you're going to be paying him into his late 30s, you know, more than $50 million. Do you want to give up a player like Jonathan Kuminga to do that, right? That's what all these things are, what the Warriors have to weigh out, what the Clippers have to weigh out, what Paul George has to weigh out, what else would be part of that deal, and what's going in, what's going out. And then again, do the Clippers want to help the Golden State Warriors? Or would they just be better suited letting Paul George just walk and not play for Golden State and play elsewhere, probably an Eastern Conference team, and then they go about
makes sense. Yeah, their business as usual. They lose the asset, but they don't help a rival.
And they save money, right? I mean, the Clippers have had one of the richest tax bills. I mean, we know Steve Ballmer's not afraid to spend. Maybe he takes a look at it if Paul George walks as kind of a reset year. And you rejigger what your team looks like a little bit, focus more on maybe some of the younger players that they have, and try and make a push around Kawhi Leonard and James Harden. So all those factors are working together, along with the time crunch that they're in, because the deadline for his opt-in is Saturday, and Chris Paul's guarantee date expires they have to guarantee that by Sunday. They moved that to Sunday right before free agency. I still think there's a possibility they don't come to a deal. You're looking at probably Chris Paul getting waived, opening up that $30 million that takes him down to $146-147 million, and then they can focus on filling out their team via free agency. But all those factors are working together, and doesn't mean it's an impossibility. Doesn't mean Paul George isn't coming. I think it's just tricky. It's a tough needle to thread. And that being said, no bets from me.
Oh, Sam, I got so excited about the whole way.
I left Vegas. I left Vegas in January to come here. I left Vegas behind me.
What's he going
to
say, they said? And then we didn't get an answer? You fucker. All right, Maxine, you give us an answer. You had to bet something significant to you. Paul George here or not?
No. What? In the end of the day, Ballmer, why would he not do this, right? I think the rumor that's been floating around is that Kawhi says I have to be the highest paid player on the Clippers. But like Steve Ballmer, at the end of the day, he doesn't give a shit about this. Like these players are already, like Kawhi is only playing like 10 games out of the season anyway. So like what leverage does he really have? I think Ballmer re-signs him, to Sam's point. There's like, he doesn't want to do us any favors. And frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if Lacob comes in and says, you know, I'm not super keen on trading out Kuminga. I think there's more opportunity. Paul George is at the end of his timeline. I don't necessarily see him be able to contribute in the playoffs at as high of a level as he should, considering his talent level overall. And I think Kuminga is on the ascendancy. So I don't think it actually makes sense for either team to really do this deal.
If I was Steve Ballmer and had like, you know, $10 million as like loose change in most of my pants, just randomly, you know, just hell of money all over the place, and I heard through a staffer that Kawhi Leonard, after I gave him a 4-year extension and he was not playing for me during the playoffs, was like, nobody can earn more than me, I would pay the mascot $3 more than him, just as a fuck you. Just like, why the hell? Don't you worry about who I pay, man. Like, how about you worry about playing basketball as opposed to watching like the amount of my checks to other people? Sam, missed you. phenomenal to have you back. That last answer was just perfectly played. I tried desperately to press you one way or the other. You saw right through that. You gave us enough information where I couldn't really give you shit at the back end. So nicely done. And for people who need way more Sam Gordon in their life, where do they go?
At my Sam Gordon is my Twitter, my X handle, and you can follow along with all our work at the San Francisco Chronicle, sfchronicle.com. So it's going to be a really big few days here. We understand that. We know that. We're getting ready for it. I'm certainly getting ready for it. As we just talked about, there's a lot of different ways that these next couple of days can go for the Warriors, and super excited to follow along and try and make sense of it in real time.
Instead of a plug for us, I'm going to give you another plug. If you have ever thought at any point that I seemed well prepared for this show, it is because I've stolen research from Mr. Sam Gordon. Any stats you ever get, any takes that seem like, oh man, he knew about that player, it's because I am a subscriber to the San Francisco Chronicle and I pick up most of my things from him. So if you want to support us, support Sam, go get a subscription. You'll learn far more than we can teach you. With that in mind, go Warriors, and hopefully, we'll see you real soon.
Good.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.